Honeywood Reel 3. Developing this subject a little more about how you adapted to the sort of severe conditions you were faced with, were there any steps you could take to make yourselves more comfortable than the trench
conditions? I don't think so. There's no question of comfort. It's merely nature adapted itself, I think.
Did you find that over a period of time, you, through sheer experience of the conditions, became more adapted to them, or did you find that with the elapse of time, they had an increasingly depressing effect?
They didn't have any depressing effect on me, personally, but I was very glad to get out of the line occasionally. One of the things, of course, that was so appalling was lice. One regularly had to sit, take one's clothes off and sit and kill these damn brutes in the seams of your shirt and that kind of thing. But I think nature adapted itself.
Now, in July, you found yourself buried in a dugout during an artillery barrage.
In September, as I said. Not July, that was my fault. Yes, I was buried by shell fire, crushed and invalided, first down to Camier, which was the field hospital for France, where I was operated on, and then back to England.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of 1915, in December, you were posted to German East Africa as part of Norforce. What exactly was the composition of the group which you were attached to?
Yes, on the 2nd of December, 15, we left for Cape Town in German East. The commander was General Sir Edward Northey. He was then brigadier. His chief of staff was one Saunders Knox Gore. His staff captain, Anderson, who was a big game hunter and had been in German East before, and myself, graded as his ADC.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out. We went out on that, can't remember which, it was a castle boat, and landed at Cape Town on Christmas Day, 1915.
When you got to Cape Town, were there much signs of military preparations or equipment?
Nothing at all.
Cape Town was in its civilian clothes.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. One would hardly have noticed anything.
Yes. Now, the journey, I think, from Cape Town to your final base in Germany, East Africa, was an extremely interesting one. And the first phase took you from Cape Town to Salisbury.
Yes.
Tell me about that stage of the trip.
We stayed in Cape Town for a very short time, and there we bought half a dozen motorbikes and sidecars to take up. And then we went up to Rhodesia, to Salisbury, where we stayed. I can't remember.
How did you get to Salisbury?
By rail.
Mm. What was the train journey like?
Oh, well, one went right across the, oh, I can't remember the name of the desert. Uninteresting journey, very unpleasant and hot.
What were the trains like?
With the trains, just normal, like our own.
Mm-hmm.
But the heat, of course, was the trouble.
Mm. When you got to Salisbury, what happened
there?
Well,
we stayed at Salisbury for some time arranging things, because it was there at that moment, till Northey took over, a certain General Edwards, who was in Rhodesia, commanded the troops that were the southern force of German East Africa. It was from him that Northey had to take over. Mm-hmm. So that we stayed a short time in Salisbury, and there made various arrangements. We knew that there were no roads, or practically no roads, in German East. And one thing we did arrange there was that Rhodesia would send us up a dozen mules, salted mules. When I say salted, that means they're inoculated against the tsetse fly, against sleeping sickness, and the tsetse fly. But it doesn't stop them from dying. It just makes them live longer, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
So we arranged for that. And then from Salisbury, we went by train to Beira, which is in Portuguese East Africa. And from Beira, we went by a Portuguese ship called the Manica, which was absolutely filthy, incidentally, to Chindio, which...
This was a paddle steamer?
No, that was a proper steamer.
Hmm.
From there, Chindio, we got onto the Zambezi in a paddle steamer. And there, we did the voyage up the Zambezi, being stopped on many occasions by hippos and things like that. And natives having to get out and help push the boat off sandbanks and things of that kind. Right past all the sugar plantations of Portuguese East Africa. Then up to, now what was the name of the place? Chindio. I can't remember the name of the place.
Abercorn?
What?
Abercorn?
No. That's Rhodesia. No, I can't remember the name of the place. From Chindio, we went up anyhow. We went up until we got to Zomba. But
Zomba was in Germany,
in Nyasaland.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Zomba, Nyasaland. And...
Well, tell me, did anything occur at Zomba that sticks in your mind?
The only thing really that I remember very clearly was when we sent a long cipher message to the War Office. I can't remember how many pages, but two or three pages were missing when it got to the War Office. And after a lot of thought and looking around, we discovered that the native boy who had been given this message to take to the post office dropped it on the ground and dirtied some of the pages, so he threw those pages away into the jungle. And, of course, the answer was he was put down and given six of the best. And the scene was this boy holding his bottom, running away and shouting, "Mama way and Kondo, Mama way and Kondo, Mother, it is war, Mother, it is war."
Now, the final phase of the journey was along the Rhodesian frontier to Abercorn.
Well, we haven't got there yet because we've got to go up Lake Nyasa. We went then from the foot of Lake Nyasa, which is Fort Johnson, right up the 340 miles of Lake Nyasa in the gunboat Gwendolyn. And there, when we got to the top, the general decided he was going right along the whole of the front between Rhodesia and German East, northern Rhodesia and German East. So we did the march. I can't remember how many miles it is, but it's a very long march, many hundred miles, right up to Abercorn in northern Rhodesia. We had a battle at Fife, which is the fort just before Abercorn.
Could you set the scene a little bit here for the Battle of Fife?
The Battle of Fife was Burma, a fort, German fort, which was typical of all their forts. It was built up, but then there were deep trenches filled with long spiked poles in the bottom of it, so that if you fell into those trenches you got impaled straight away all around it. And we shelled this place, and I think a lot of the shelling was done after the Germans had got out, actually, but the shelling was interesting because they were the only guns we had at the time on the southern front. They were something like 1850, and every time they fired they stood up on their tails and fell over backwards, so that you can imagine what the gunfire was like then. We fired a lot of incendiary shells, set this fort on fire, and during the night the Germans got away. A few dead bodies, but nothing else.
So you took an empty fort?
We took an empty fort in the end.
Mm.
And then, of course, we had the journey back to New Langenberg, where we made our headquarters. That was our first headquarters in German East.
When you established yourself at headquarters and familiarized yourself with the sort of general situation, how was the sort of overall campaign in East Africa when you arrived?
Well, of course, the main campaign was from the north, which was nothing to do with us at all. We were coming up from the south to join up with the northern forces. But
how did you find the scene in the south then? At, for example, the headquarters?
In the headquarters, there was an old fort, a German fort, Burma, with a couple of houses, which one we made into the staff mess. And we were there for some time. There was one road going away. When I say a road, the German East African roads are rarely tracks.
Did Northey take over a fully effective headquarters, or did he have to?
No, we just had to make our own. There was nothing at all. You see, the headquarters were Edwards was down in Salisbury in Rhodesia.
So he had to start from scratch?
He had to start from scratch.
Was it a question of building from nothing or modifying something that was already
well,
there?
Well, the troops were there, or a great many of the troops were split about all along the border, the northern Rhodesian border. But apart from that, no, there was no arrangement at all. And, of course, there were practically no roads. A few roads had been made by the engineers, and there were one or two main roads, but for the most part, everything, transport couldn't be used in most places. It was all done, I mean, all our food, for instance, was carried for hundreds of miles on the heads of natives. And of course that, as you can understand, becomes a recurring decimal, because the native has got to eat on the way too. So his 60-pound load, which he started off with on his head, probably is only about 40 pounds when it arrives at the place it's meant to get to.
Did Northey take any steps when you first arrived at New Landenberg to reorganize the forces that came under his control?
Oh, yes.
What did he do?
Well, he got more, for one thing. He got some battalions of South Africans up, and from the border he endeavored to push straight up towards the northern forces. Of course, it's all thick jungle, not easy at all. I mean, the fort of Fife, for instance, and Abercorn were given up, and the troops pushed into German East.
Yeah, these are the operations themselves, but I wonder, before he got operational, whether he had to organize his forces to his own liking. Maybe he found faults that he wanted to eliminate.
I can't remember that.
What about Northey himself? What were his sort of qualities as
Northey
a commander?
He belonged to the 60th, the King's Royal Rifle Corps. He commanded a battalion of them at Mons and the Aisne, did very well, got the DSO.
But what was he like as a person? What were his qualities as a commander? As
like a little cock sparrow. Brilliant commander. Intolerant.
Can you demonstrate any of his qualities by the sort of actions he did in any particular situation?
Difficult.
Now, as Northey's ADC, what exactly was the purpose of, and nature of your duties?
Well, my job, of course, as ADC, really, officially, was to look after him. But most of my work, I did, incidentally, a lot of cipher work for him and that kind of thing, but most of it was running around the country. When we heard the Germans were supposed to be somewhere, I used to get sent off to see if I could trace out and find out where they were, or if they were really there. In other words, kind of intelligence work.